the foremost thoughts in our minds every day. And today we're continuing in our, Just an Ordinary Day with Jesus series. And I want to talk today about relationships. Now, a couple of weeks ago on Father's Day, I spoke on relationships as they apply to family and work. But I want to expand this discussion about relationships this morning. Those relationships we have with our friends, with the people that we know casually, the family of believers, and the people that we really don't think about much, those people that we just come in contact with throughout our day, wherever we may be. As I say, I wasn't scheduled to speak today, but this call to bring the message this morning gave me an opportunity to think a bit about the title of our series, Just an Ordinary Day with Jesus. And I thought to myself, could a day with Jesus be ordinary? Of course, my imagination took me back 2,000 years, and I just thought, what would it would have been like to walk with Jesus for a day then? How awesome would it have been to be able to listen to the Sermon on the Mount, or to see him heal the blind and the sick, to watch him call Lazarus, come out, and see Jesus' friend rise and come out of his tomb. Can you imagine? Then I, of course, jump to the future when I'll see him in heaven and I'll be able to talk with him and ask him all those questions. You know, those questions that will seem so insignificant and obvious when he answers them. Back in time, forward to the future. That seemed to be the thoughts that my mind played out. But then I realized that this is not a past or future thing. It's a today thing. And we sometimes forget the promise that God and Jesus have made to us. The one that jumps to the front of my mind is the Great Commission. Jesus did not just give us the charge to make disciples of all nations. He made us a promise as well. He said, "And surely I am with you to the very end of the age." With you to the very end of the age. Now that's a long, long time. 2,000 years so far. But what that means is that he is here. This wasn't a promise just to the men that he was speaking to, because he said to the very end of the age. If we believe in him, he is a part of our lives every ordinary day. He walks with us, watches over us, and if we listen carefully, he whispers in our ear the direction he would have us go. Excuse me. Every day, the Christian walks with Jesus. And I don't have to go back in time or leap forward to some day when I'll be with him in heaven to experience his presence and enjoy his company. It's a marvel that he cares for us so much that he wants to be with us every single day. So now that I've gone off on that tangent, let's come back and talk about the subject at hand. Jesus told us to love our neighbors as ourselves. And he told us a parable about a man attacked by robbers who, gravely injured, lay at the side of the road as person after person walked by him, ignoring him. And then a Samaritan man stopped and bound his wounds and carried him to an inn down the road. He got the man a room. He paid for several nights, promising the innkeeper that he would cover any additional expense for the victim of this crime when he came back on his next trip. The parable answered the question, "Who is my neighbor?" The Jews and the Samaritans didn't get along. They didn't like each other very much. In fact, like could never be used to describe that relationship. Yet the Samaritan man became the Jewish man's benefactor and friend in his time of need. He could have walked on by just like everyone else did, but he had God's heart and couldn't just ignore the man. The important thing here is that the Samaritan man formed a relationship with this gravely injured man. I would like to think that people might be more compassionate today After all, there probably isn't a person in the entire country, excuse me, that hasn't heard, at least heard this story. Yet a few months ago, I saw a news report about a man who had been hit by a car one night in a large city. A security camera recorded the whole incident. The man was crossing the street when he was hit, and the car kept going. The man was thrown into the gutter and laid there, severely injured. No one stopped to help. People, perhaps thinking he was a drunk or homeless, looked away as they walked by. One person did stop, and I thought, finally! But that man was not a benefactor. He stole the man's wallet and ran away. At last, several minutes later, someone called 911 and reported the man in the street. When the police arrived and the ambulance took the man to a hospital, it was too late, and he died. Would he have lived if someone, perhaps one of the people on the sidewalk who had actually seen the accident occur, had called the police right then? Well, we'll never know, because it didn't happen. So even today, we find examples that show the "I don't want to get involved" attitude that was so strongly seen in the parable of the Good Samaritan. The only problem is no Samaritan came by for this man. But you know, we don't need to see an injured man laying in the street to know that we need to step out of our comfort zone and into a relationship. It might be as simple as a lady leaving a grocery store whose full bag suddenly breaks open, spilling her items on the ground. Should we tisk-tisk that and just walk by? Or should we stop and help her pick them up and carry them to her car? It might be the man whose car stalls in an intersection. Should we honk and drive around? Or should we stop and offer to help him push the car out of the road, to call for help for him? It might be another Christian who's having a crisis of faith and needs to talk to someone to overcome their doubt. Simple, even minor things, can lead to a relational involvement, just as big things can. We have a video that I'd like to play which describes a situation that is not life-threatening or even dangerous. But I think it shows the two opposites of how people react to an uncomfortable situation. Let's watch it and see. Did I have it in the wrong place?
No.
Okay. We're all set up to play DVDs, videotapes, or an adventure.
Excuse me, could you see if there are any other seats in the back?
My dad would drive.
Excuse me. Is she buckled up?
Oh, yes. That's the first thing she does. She loves to work the seatbelt.
Here we go!
Did you see if there were any other seats in the back?
Well, there's just a couple singles.
Well, can you move them there?
Well, there are two together, sir.
Look, I don't mean to be a pain, but we're on vacation.
Well, I'll see what I can do.
I need you to sit still. Be a good girl.
Good.
I'll be right back. Mommy loves you, honey.
Miss your grandpa, huh?
Papa!
You see him out there?
Papa!
Why don't you sit over here and then you can see out the window.
No, seatbelt? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, seatbelt.
Can you see Papa? Look!
Why don't you sit here? See, this seat has a seatbelt too.
Oh, Mama sit.
No, she can sit over there, and then you sit here. You two just switch.
Switch.
I'm sure it'll be okay.
Well,
Papa's okay, remember? He's in heaven. He's all right.
Papa.
Well, we'll have to work on our video setup here. What happened was that you didn't get to see is that she moved over to the seat next to him, and he made a story out of the little descriptive book that was in the seat back about the airplane, and she fell asleep. It was a very simple situation. Now, both of the men in this video were obviously uncomfortable with the young lady. The young lady who had no ability to control her impulsive and disruptive behavior. One man let his discomfort turn to anger and frustration. The other turned it into compassion. Which one would you be? How much would it have mattered if the angry man had just accepted the circumstances and the discomfort? Was the world going to end because this young lady was sitting near him? And how little effort really did it take for the other man, the compassionate one, to humor and comfort this girl? Yet the results of their actions were so different. One man just wanted to move the disruption to someone else's area. The other was willing to help her be calm and comfortable. And I think which one, had Jesus been on that plane, would have heard him say, "Well done." Relationships. They're as simple as a stranger's compassion for another stranger. Now we have many relationships. Family, friends, co-workers, neighbors, the body of Christ and the pews of the church. We have relationships that we haven't formed yet, but will. We may form relationships with people we'll never see again. The compassionate man on the airplane most likely never saw this young lady and her mother again. But for one airplane flight, he made a difference in her life. Whose life are we making a difference in? Now, this isn't easy. It breaks the mold for many of us. I know that when I started working at the shelters, I brought with me my cop's cynicism. I was skeptical of stories and questioned motivations. But I soon learned that regardless of what caused a family's homelessness, they still needed help. And like the Good Samaritan or the compassionate man on the plane, if I didn't help them, who would? I came to realize that mistakes are a part of life, that we all make them. We all have things that we've done that we're not proud of or wish we could do over. As Christ said, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. And none of us are without a past, without a sin. The difference is that we have a future. It became my goal to give every family that came into the shelter a future. Many, many times that didn't happen. But I would like to believe that in those cases, I was at least able to plant a seed that would grow and produce fruit later. And many times people's lives did change. They got it. They came to the realization that they did have the ability to change their circumstances. They didn't have to let their past control their future. They were free to change. Many restored a damaged relationship with Christ, and others found salvation for the first time. As St. Francis of Assisi said, preach the gospel continuously. If necessary, use words. When we demonstrate the love of Christ by reaching out to others with a hand of compassion, we preach his love. When we support a ministry, here or abroad, we show people around the world that God's people are people of love and compassion. That our God is a loving God who would that all be saved. And when we encourage and support another Christian who's having trouble, we're doing what Christ would have done had he been there. Our relationships open pathways for people. They lift up people, and they support and encourage people, whether our friends, fellow Christians, family members, or just someone we came across during an ordinary day. We are given the blessing of being able to help others. And we'll try, and we'll fail. We'll reach out, and our hand will be slapped away. We'll invest in others and lose our investment. We'll be scammed, taken advantage of, and victimized. But we will be blessed because God looks at our motivation and action, not theirs. And in spite of the outcome, we will make a difference in someone's life. And we might plant that seed that will grow to salvation, that may save a life that was almost too far gone. And isn't that the right thing for us to do? James wrote in his epistle regarding this frustration. Of course, he was speaking on a much broader plane, but he really covers this kind of a situation as well. He said, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything. So whether it be hardship, persecution, rejection, or contempt, all trials produce a stronger faith. When we see others in distress, how can we turn away and still claim to be Christ's followers? When we have been given the opportunity to help, how can we turn away or pretend we don't see? When a fellow believer comes to us for encouragement and support, how can we say, talk to the pastor, instead of offering what's needed? When Satan goes on the offensive, how can we run away? How can we ignore the relationships that are a part of our lives, casual or strong? Paul told the Galatians in chapter 6, let us not become weary of doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. And even more importantly, Christ told us in Matthew chapter 25, I tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me. Now I use that last verse from Matthew as a personal encouragement and an encouragement to others. Reaching out in some small way to help another person in their time of need is reaching out to Jesus. Giving our time and resources to help others is giving to Jesus. Picking up the spilled groceries for a lady whose bag is broken is picking up Jesus' groceries. Giving a poor person gas so he can get to work is gassing up Jesus' car. Donating to World Vision or Love, Inc. or any of the organizations that help others is giving that help to Jesus. Jesus gave us a new dynamic in the way we interact with others. He not only told us to love our neighbor, he told us to love our enemies. That goes against the grain. In Luke chapter 6, at verse 27, he told us this. But I tell you who hear me, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. If someone strikes you on one cheek, turn to him the other also. If someone takes your cloak, do not stop him from taking your tunic. Give to everyone who asks you. And if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, because He is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. And I say, that goes against our grain, even with a strong Christian faith. We tend to think of God helps those who help themselves. Of course, that's not in the Bible. That's a saying of man. A man, perhaps, that didn't want to help anyone else. The bottom line of all this is that everyone is a child of God. Some believe and others do not. But God sees everyone as a child because He created us to be that. Even though we sin and reject and turn away, He still loves everyone and is not willing that any of these little ones be lost. He formed King David in the womb. He knew Jeremiah before he was born. If He did this for them, He has done this for everyone on earth. This makes everyone our family. Brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, nieces and nephews, all family. So regardless of who we might come in contact with, who might need our help, who might need an encouraging word or a touch, we're all related. Adam and Eve were the beginning, and we are all descendants of theirs. By God's own hand, they were formed from the dust of the earth. And by God's own hand, you and I and everyone everywhere are God's handiwork. His family. He wants everyone to come to know Him and His love and His grace. We can reach out and help that happen. Remember, John 3:16 begins with, "For God so loved the world." You know, we can help people understand that love by living God's love in the way we touch others. Does God deny those He loves? Should we? Now, as our worship team comes up, I'd like to finish with this. Saint Teresa of Avila wrote this prayer. And I think it is so true and so simple that it is something that we should all have hanging on our walls and written on our hearts. Lord Christ, you have no body on earth but ours, no hands but ours, no feet but ours. Ours are the eyes through which your compassion must look out on the world. Ours are the feet by which you may still go about doing good. Ours are the hands with which you bless people now. Bless our minds and our bodies, that we may be a blessing to others. Amen. Heavenly Father, help us understand that relationships